And we're live. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of PGA Unofficial Live. Today, we have kind of another jam session, but we are very pleased, Vivica and I, to have a very special guest in the house. Mr. Nick Peterson is here, our fearless, intrepid leader. And yeah, I'm excited. So Vivica, before we kick it off, over to Nick, and I guess I should just share that we would love to have you all. Please leave your questions. I could even invite you into the StreamYard room if you'd like to join us live and ask some questions of the group here. But really super happy to have you here, Nick. And Vivica, what's going on with you today?
Nothing. I like these little impromptus, kind of join the panel thing. I like it. I'm digging it. Nothing. Just excited to have Nick here and, dive into whatever's going on with TGA and obviously any insights on the arena. So welcome, Nick. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, so happy to be here.
I don't know if I told you this, Vivica, if you noticed, but just as we were signing off last week after our little jam session with Joseph and Dwayne and all the people that were talking in the chat, Nick in capital letters said, I'm here. And I didn't get it until after I hit the end broadcast button. And I thought, sure, I'd get, all my stripes ripped from my sleeve from my TGA membership or my guardianship. Pleased to be able to make it up with you today, Nick. I'd love for you to start while we're waiting for some things to come in the chat with just, there's been one of the things that we talked about quite a bit last week with folks is this whole idea of the arena, engaging the field. And I would love to maybe jam a little bit on some of the things you've been encouraging us to get into, like rearview mirror. So give us the lowdown on what's going on with Guardian Academy and this new arena offering, and who can join, how can they join, and what's it for?
Yeah, so let me get my camera back on. I had to take my hoodie off. I'm burning up in here. So the big, it's got. We've talked about this on a Guardian call. The big question when you're building something, right? And I'm going to say like a product. It could be a community. It can just be, it doesn't have to be something that makes money. But it's really, okay, who are my kind of people? That's really the question. And in business in particular, it's really difficult to stay oriented towards my kind of people because there are so many ways that you can potentially like make money or generate revenue or build your business or build your community. And 99% of those ways are not going to appeal to your kind of people, but they will make money, right? So it's kind of like, okay, do I want to sell more stuff or do I want to attract the right kind of people? Ideally you want to do both, but there's many things that could, like we get more people involved, but it wouldn't be our kind of people. And that doesn't really work well over a long period of time. So the arena is really thinking through, okay, who's the kind of people, who's our kind of people? And we say our kind of people, especially when you're doing something like this, and that could be a sport, a hobby, bike, people that you ride bikes with every Sunday, like whatever. Or it can be a community, a business, a consulting program, an educational program, a brand, like Patagonia and Nike, and they have very clear Apple. Remember when Apple had those commercials for the Misfits and the Outcasts? And there's always some like dog. It's I like to think of it as a dog whistle, meaning only your kind of people hear it and nobody else does. So a lot of really good brand and a lot of really good communities, they have like dog whistle marketing, which is they just put out a broadcast that kind of everybody else misses, but the right people are like, oh, wait a minute. And so thinking through that, we say, okay, so we have the Guardian Academy and we have Guardian. And we love the Guardian Academy as providers from a sense of we could put stuff out there and 99% of it's free. And that's great. So then you think, and this might not be totally relevant to people that are interested in this kind of stuff, but then you think, okay, how do you actually, if you want to have an impact, you have to figure out a way to make it economically sustainable. I'm just going to throw that out there because a lot of people are like, I don't want to charge anything because I just want to help people. And it's like, cool. You kind of end up, and no judgment, but you kind of end up like sitting in your mom's basement because, you know, like you can't afford to do anything. It's really hard to help people. You can make free videos. You can make free articles. You do whatever. But on the internet specifically, which is where the arena is happening right at first. In the internet specifically, and even if we did the arena in person and our guarded events in person, most people get exposed to us for the first time on the internet. There are people that, and companies and brands that will pay for placement. I mean, you can do all kinds of free stuff and nobody will ever see it because there's limited space on YouTube. There's limited space on Facebook. So thinking through all that, you say, okay, well, if it has to make sense economically, there's a lot of models that are like cookie cutter, you know, you got one-on-one and group and, you know, one-on-one, small group, large group. And these are all like really just lazy ways to try to group things together. So we think, okay, what do we really want? We want to be the driving force behind a lot of really cool stuff. I'm going the long route here because I hope it's useful to people to hear the reasoning. So there's this really interesting thing, and I've talked to a lot of people about this recently, where there's a preference. So this is my preference. I'm biased this way. So I'm always going to kind of come from this angle and prioritize this way. And I'm not saying it's right. It's just my preference. I rather spend the time, effort, and resources with one person that goes on and impacts 4,000 than try to get in front of 4,000 people hoping that one of them is impacted by it. Right? Those are very different strategies. Yep. So if you're going, more reach, and you have no, like, you know, a lot of that stuff's not really impactful. And some of it might be, it's just not my style. So we think, okay, we want to help the fewer number of people directly with our time that are going to have a significant impact on many others. So we can help 10, and those 10 can impact a million. That's just my personality. That's my style. And I think you have a higher probability of succeeding in doing that than showing your video to a million people and hoping that somebody gets it, you know, and hoping that somebody knows what to do with it. So what that really means is we want more people kind of at the guardian level, which is Dan John is a great example. You guys are both great examples. Laurel Portier is a great example where, okay, I could spend a day with Laurel and she's such an action taker that within a week, what we've done together, she's helped 4,000. She, I think she has 4,000 people in her program right now. So 4,000 people were impacted, and those 4,000 people were never going to listen to me anyway. Right. And so, okay, that's what we want. We want those like movers and shakers. You know, I'm sitting in Genius Network, so I spend time with Joe Polish. If I could just spend time with Joe, Joe's got a massive audience. So I want more guardians, and want more guardians specifically that take action in a way that's beneficial to other people. So when we're thinking about, all right, we got our front end stuff. How do we bridge the gap? What are we really trying to accomplish with, you know, upsells and cross sells and ascension ladders and all that stuff? And that's not how we think about it. We actually think, okay, the world is huge. We have a very specific kind of person. If this kind of person shows up from an energy standpoint, if somebody says, hey, can I pay you $1,000 for a day of your time? It's like, no, you can't. You can't pay me $3,000 or $5,000 for doing my time. I don't know anything about you, and it might be a waste of time. So it's really tough to sell time to strangers and effort and bandwidth and all that stuff. However, if I can see that, and this is how all of my mentors have treated me. If I see that you are an action taker and you are doing stuff and, you know, like you're hitting a limit, I'll spend time with you to remove that limit. It's kind of like can't deny somebody their own greatness. Now, the problem is everybody likes to think they have greatness in them, but they're not willing to do anything. So, all right, we want more guardians. I want to spend a lot of time with them. And the only way that we can justify, me in particular, can justify spending a lot of time with them. I also want to introduce them to our resources. You know, John Hurry, Dr. Jeff Spencer, Joe Polish, all these people. And the only way I can justify that, it's not economic. Because there's so many ways to make money. It's, I need to have, there needs to be a high probability that if I introduce them to Dr. Jeff or Joe, or we spend time with them, they're going to do something with it. Like, a lot of people like, and I get it, you know, there's people that pay 25 grand a year to be in a group, or like 100 grand a year to be in a club, and they never use it. That's a great business model for people that are into that stuff. That's just not what we're trying to accomplish. So all that to say, all right, we got all these free resources. We got the Guardian tier. The real lever to pull is to try to figure out who values engaging the field. That's what we're trying to figure out. So who values it, and how do you know if somebody values something? They pay for it. So now how do we create a transaction that shows us that this person is engaging the field, they're moving forward, and they're willing to do the work? That's the number one. Not who. So just as an example, we could have, and we talked about it, we could have said, let's put all these like premium courses and yada, 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 package them all up and we'll sell them for $1,000 or whatever. Great deal. All that does is tell us that all these people that paid will pay for more courses. And that is not what we're looking for. So that would not be a good offer to put in this place. So the arena is really, for right now, it's available only to guardians and people that were founding members of the original founding member group. It's an additional structure, and the format is, okay, take a concept or a principle and do something with it. You don't have to do it right. You don't have to know all the details, but do something with it. And if you do something with it, you come into the arena, show us what you did. Tell us what you did. And then you get a little bit of feedback, a little bit of coaching, a little bit of support, and we'll do anything we can for you if you did something, right? And so what you're doing is we're just trying to provide a structure to implement what we teach, like the whole learning and intelligence and stuff. So excuse this cough, by the way. So that's really the main purpose of the arena is, one, give guardians another outlet and a different structure to really iterate quickly. Like, you could say, hey, this is my problem. I say, hey, go read this article and do something. And if you come back and say, yeah, well, what should I do? It doesn't matter. Do something. Because you cannot live your life going to other people asking them what you should do all the time. So go do something with this information. It could be wrong, but as long as you did something, then we can justify the time saying, okay, well, maybe think about it this way. We just can't have that talk with 20,000 people, you know? So it's a rapid iteration. It's really more of a implementation iteration program. Most of the education is free, as it should be. Information is free. So the real benefit is, okay, you take it, you're like, huh, raise the floor. Well, I'm trying to, you know, get my diet together. So how could I raise the floor of my diet? And it forces you to think through it. And then you come to the arena and you say, hey, I've been doing this. This is, I want to fix my diet. And this is how I interpreted raising the floor. So I implemented this. And that just tells us, oh, you did something. And then we can iterate and refine it from there. Say, hey, now try this. Go back, do it, come back. Say, hey, now do this. Go back, do it, come back. So it's just that's on the deliverable side. And then on the other side is the arena. Some of the arena sessions will be streamed live. so that people sitting on the outside, they can watch and they can learn and they can kind of get read. They can kind of see behind the scenes of how people that actually do stuff are operating. Cause as you both know, it's not what people think, you know, it's like messy and people, it's iterative. And, so I think if more people actually saw how iterative and how much of the, it's not a straight line, it'd be really beneficial. We do the arena, we stream it, and that's kind of the game. And as we go, we'll start to refine it, you know? And ultimately what I would love to see is somebody come in and say, hey, I took this concept of enough, or I took this concept of frequency of exposure, right? And I applied it this way. And it's some crazy ass way that we never would have thought of. And like, that's the real magic, is now we're saying, okay, sound principle combined with your unique disposition and your industry equals, it's an emergent property. Something emerges that did not exist before. And that's, those are going to be your industry leaders and your innovators are the, so we're hoping to see some of those so we can highlight them and celebrate them and, spotlight them and all that stuff for creating shit that didn't exist before.
How for the people that are just looking to build community and not necessarily monetize, and I know, you know, the caveat of you're going to want to probably monetize it at some point or whatever have you, but for those that are starting who don't have an audience and maybe want to build community to be able to build the following before they try to monetize, any tips on how the arena or what they would be doing to kind of help them make those initial moves? Because a lot of times, you know, it might be someone who's never had a product or doesn't have a course, or maybe they're still a W-2, right? But they have a skill set that they'd like to share, or they have some community in mind that they would like to build. Yeah. How would they kind of engage?
I think the biggest mistake somebody makes in that scenario, which it's a tough thing, because this is just what happens, is trying to build a community. Keyword trying. It's like, look, my friend has a cat. And then you're like trying to pet the cat. What does it do? It runs away. And then when you're like, you know what? Fuck that cat. And you just sit down and do nothing. It comes to you. And so I think the best way to build a community is kind of keep top of mind that you'd like to build a community, right? But that's just, you have that in mind so that you can identify when it starts happening so you can build a little bit of structure around it. The best example I can give you is, you've seen Forrest Gump, right? So we have a saying, we don't use it in the Garden Academy yet, but we say gump it, just gump it, which means, you remember him, he's running and he's got this big group of followers. He didn't go out and try to get the followers. He just did what he wanted to do. So I think the best way to build a community, honestly, and you can have a structure, you know, I wouldn't get caught up on what it is. It'd be a group text, is to do something that you would do anyway. Otherwise it gets really frustrating. Oh, what's the point? Yeah. But if you're just going to write about fitness, or you're just going to share videos on, you know, cool spreadsheets you made, you're gonna do it anyway. Just fucking do it. And the community will select itself. It's way lower stress than trying to force a community. Cause then you go, okay, I want a community about this thing. And you start thinking, how do I grow a community? And you start looking at these tips and these tactics and these tools, and you change this. And pretty soon the community is not really what you want it to be. It's what a whole bunch of other people told you other people will like. So for community building, if there's no intent in the short term to monetize it, I would just do whatever the hell you want to do on whatever medium you want. You can go to Instagram and search Body by Bagels. And all we did was we sat at Einstein's Bagels every Sunday from 9 to noon. And we just told people, we sat at Einstein's Bagels from 9 to noon every Sunday. And then we're like, hey, if you come, I went to Einstein's and I said, hey, look, if somebody comes and they say they know me, we just give them free coffee. That's easy for them. Coffee's super cheap. So we start telling them, hey, yeah, come to Einstein's. If it's on a Sunday, just say you know me, you get free coffee, and we'll hang out. And we started having lines out the door and around the block, and they used to have to announce on Sundays on their Facebook page, like, hey, can you please park across the street, yada, yada, yada. So we built a community around bagels for no reason other than it was just a really, I mean, what I wanted was I wanted the attention of the owner of the bagel shop because he was a really influential person and I got it. But it's like, okay, you know what? We want to build a community. We didn't start with wanting to build a community. We said, we want to get this guy's attention. Found out he owns Einstein Bagels. So we're going to make him pay attention to us. but here's the truth. Here's the reality. I'd have been totally cool if it was just me and my buddy Trevor Cashy. If we just sat at Einstein's from 9 to noon every day, the two of us hanging out. Right. So when it's something that you would just do because it's awesome, it's really easy to get other people on board because there's other people like you that also are just going to think it's awesome. When you start trying to use compelling hooks and reasons to join, and you get away from that gravity of because it's awesome. Right. So if you're watching, anybody ever said, if you've ever had a group or a program or whatever, the Guardian Academy is a version of it, but the network was even more extreme, which is like, why do people join? Because it's awesome. It's like, well, I don't understand. What's the hook? What's the compelling introduction? What's the elevator pitch? And it's like, the more you work on that, the less people join because it's awesome. They join because you made some hook or some promise, which is fine. But the community gets further and further away from being a community of like-minded people. the more you try to get people to join. So I would just figure out, what the hell do I want to do? And what do I care about enough that I would continue to do it? Mr. Beast is a great example, by the way. Even though he's going to be worth many billions of dollars, he made a video every day with like 5 subscribers for years. So it's like, what would I do? Because I'm so interested in it. I mean, DeFi was that way. Fitness was that way for me. it's like, I'm going to do this regardless. And then just have the wherewithal to notice, oh, look, you know, like Forrest Gump. Oh, look, people are following. I could add some structure to this. And then rinse and repeat. And what happens is if you have a hiking club and you just go hiking, we do it. This is what we do this every Sunday. We just go up to the mountain, we either climb or hike, depending on how many people come. And there's not much structure to it. But if people start blowing up my text messages because they don't know the schedule and people are super bummed out because they didn't know, yeah, like we start adding structure to facilitate it. I wouldn't add structure until there's so many people that want to participate that you're doing them a favor. So last bit on this, because I think it's useful. There's a big difference between adding structure because it's useful to a whole bunch of people versus building a structure and trying to force people into it. Those are two very different things. So hopefully that makes sense where it's, this is already happening. Can I add some structure to make it better for everyone versus I built this thing. Now I got to try to force people into it. It's a different thing.
Just to share a couple of different perspectives on what you're saying, Nick, because I think this is super helpful. And Vivica, I don't know if you were talking about anybody we know, but I think you might've been, but, you know, one of the things that I'm hearing in what you're saying, Nick, is speaks to one of the things that was very compelling to me at the very beginning of my introduction to the Guardian Academy, which was play your game, like play your game out loud and in public, do your thing and let them watch. That whole idea of over the shoulder and, you know, I'm going to be doing this anyways. I might as well do it out loud and in public because that is how you're going to attract more of the my kind of people or the right people. But the other thing that came to my mind, Nick, as you were speaking is like, yeah, do the thing that you're going to do anyways, and then think about the structure. But that's exactly kind of your goal pyramid. It's like, what is enough? And when you have enough people that are following, paying attention, asking you how they can participate, then how can you add, you know, what's, you know, what's the level that's sufficient, and then build a structure around that afterwards. so that you're doing the right things at the right time in the right order. So I think one of the things that was so helpful to me in the last Guardian call was you were speaking to this in my situation, which is I'm trying to figure out how to leverage Substack, which has got traction, but I want to gain a little bit of momentum. And you had this great insight. Like, it sounds like what you're biasing for with your subscribers is you want to have discussions. So make your content, make your posting on social media, make your calls to action in the Substack to dog whistle the people that are interested in joining a discussion, which is not everyone, actually not very many, but if you just get enough, and I'm definitely at the enough stage, then how do I put structure into that? So I just wanted to kind of highlight those elements of what I was seeing. But the other thing that you said that I would love for you to maybe expand on is, you know, why are you doing what you're doing? And one of the things I love about the way that you share your insights and the way that the Guardian Academy puts most of its content out for free is it's not about getting recognition for the idea. It's more about having an impact by getting more of the right people, the right eyeballs onto that content and helping them through that exposure, start to think about, well, how can I get greater proximity and access? And it sounds like the arena is going to be a lever for that as well. You're muted, it looks like. Sorry.
I thought I was coughing, so I
muted
unmute myself. The arena. So the whole here's my in terms of, I think a lot of people do want to have an impact, and I think a lot of people don't. And either way, it's fine. No judgment. The important thing to reconcile is when you say, I want to have an impact. So it's kind of like the speed and velocity thing. When somebody goes, I want to go fast, what they imagine in their head is not speed, it's velocity. Like there's a direction component, there's a vector. And so a lot of times when people are saying, I want to have an impact, what they're imagining in their head is actually getting credit for having an impact. And those are different things. So the thing to reconcile is, do you care if you get credit or not? And frankly, somebody has to, so that it's not a no judgment. You know, it's different strategies though. So if you say, I just want to have a huge impact, you could like lock yourself away in a lab, create something really cool, cure for cancer, whatever. And Richard Branson comes along and goes, ooh, I tell you what, I can get that to everybody. I'll put billions of dollars into it. Let me slap a Virgin logo on it. Right. He wants credit for it. Both parties are important. I'm just saying that so like there's no judgment. If you are the person that wants credit for something, you play an important role in it actually helping people. So I take the other side. I don't care if I get credit. that's an important thing to reconcile because it informs strategy. So there's this there's that, which is like, okay, first we have to reconcile, do I care if I get credit? No. And one of the things that you look at if you say, or one of the things that I measure anyway, is I want to have the biggest impact possible, and I don't care if I get credit. In fact, it's better if I don't, because if I get credit for, let's say, Laurel Portier's strategy, right, and I'm like, I want credit for that, what happens is Laurel is way better at that than I am. So if the whole world comes to me thinking I'm the best at it, it's not as good for the world. It's better for them to go to her. So I believe, you know, getting credit for what really is somebody else's baby, it creates kind of a worse product in the sense that people go to the wrong place, the wrong source. It's just my belief. Again, no judgment to anybody else. So one of the things I want to look at is kind of the impact to attention ratio, which is, again, I rather have one new follower that goes on and impacts 1,000 people than have 1,000 new followers and impact none of them. So that's kind of like the ratio I'm watching. And so when we talk about the arena, ideally, we can get it structured in a way, and this is just full transparency for everybody listening and watching, where the basic arena calls are not me. You know, like kind of the structure, and actually Randy, if you guys have ever seen Randy RR, he's phenomenal at that stuff. But that's part of the game, is like make it get the outcome, get the support, all that stuff. So a heavy feature of the arena would be if you come and you say, hey, look, I took this principle and I applied it this way. I would want the arena to be really heavy on highlighting like you, not, yeah, that's great, look how awesome we are for helping you, but like, wow, how you took this concept and you turned it into that, you're a fucking genius. You know, so there's a, as much as possible, trying to turn it around and highlight the other party. And it all fits into this kind of live to learn, give to earn. But yeah, the most important thing to me is so there's a term to be fully transparent and honest. People that operate like we're operating are not entirely altruistic. That's like, it's not like we're homeless and giving everything away, you know? It's I believe that over time we will build a much stronger brand. So it's like a long term, it's like, oh, you don't, short term, we're not that concerned about trying to make money off everybody. I think the long term brand equity will handle that. So I also believe it's just the best way to build a really strong brand, which is just people come, they engage, whether you're in the arena or you're watching the arena or you heard about the arena, it's just a positive experience. So it all kind of works together in that way.
So during these arena sessions, I mean, I guess people will be nervous maybe to raise their hands or step into the arena initially, just because they don't know what to expect, or, you know, maybe they don't want to be kind of in the spotlight and kind of have any kind of commentary, or, you know, whatever the case is. Is there anything that you can highlight to kind of ease those tensions so that you have more people kind of not be nervous about stepping into the arena and actually taking action? Because obviously some people just are nervous to take action. So
yeah, and so there's a few layers of that. One is the way that it is built. It gives everybody the gift of going second. Meaning the first time, you know, it's like people are way more likely to go bungee jumping after they see their friend do it. It's the gift of going second. So whoever bungee jumps first gives everybody else the gift of going second. And so just the fact that we do the arena and that we could stream it in the Facebook group or YouTube or whatever, we're giving everybody the gift of going second. We only need one guardian to step up and engage. And I actually have two already set up that asked great questions yesterday. And I said, bring this to the arena. Right. So already the gift of going second. Now we'll have it in our content and all that stuff. The reality is, If you're in a place where you're not ready to step in to the arena, keep engaging the field on your own. I don't think it's got to be your decision. I don't think there's times where it might make sense as a forcing function, where like you pay money as a forcing function to get you out there publicly. But that's not what we are. You know, like, so it's really like, here's a ton of articles. Here's a ton of free stuff, all the frameworks. This is how you can engage the field on your own. Leave your 6-word updates. It's like, so we'll do everything we can to encourage people to do that. But I would not recommend like stepping into the arena, which means if you're coming in cold, paying money to be in the arena, and not be ready to put it out there, because stepping into the arena is part of the curriculum, right? Like the act of stepping into the arena is part of the transformation. Some people are already there, but that's kind of the, you know, so it's a whole, it's like going through the process is becoming what you're supposed to learn. It's like, we're not teaching a whole lot. Like direct teaching is like an apprenticeship model where it's not, you know, here, read the book and then you know it. It's like, hey, come take a walk with me, and by the time you're done, you'll know it. And so that's how the model's built. So it is like being ready to step, all the free stuff hopefully gets you there. But stepping into the arena is part of the curriculum. It's becoming, it's not just learning about it, it's becoming the thing that you're supposed to be learning about. So the hope is there's enough social proof and enough people stepping up in the beginning that everybody watching kind of goes, okay, I get this. And all they want to see is if you step up and for the most part, and you're like, I got this really stupid idea. And I'm, you know, it's probably not, you know, super simple and yada, yada, yada. And they ask, what happens?
Sorry.
What happens is if we respond to it like not assholes, you know, we say that's actually not, that's a great question. And the truth is, and this is the truth. Anytime you're like, ooh, this is probably a stupid question, and you're worried to bring it up. When you ask that question or you bring it up, you look like the smartest person in the room, because 80 to 90% of people in the room had the same question and they were too afraid to ask. So you're a fucking hero to them. So if we can turn this hesitancy into something heroic, which it is, it becomes a lot easier for people to step into it, right? So it's just, it's all baked into the experience more so than here's a list of things you can do to get ready. It's like, just show up. And when you see, when you're like, man, I could never ask this question, then somebody else asks it and everybody's like, wow, I'm so glad you asked that. As a viewer, you're like, oh, that was a valid question. And in time, you learn that your questions are valid and useful and totally should be addressed. So it's just a like full immersion, like become the thing. And if you're not going to become the thing, go read the free shit and learn the things. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, it really does. I love this idea. Number one, I've always loved that speech, "The Man in the Arena" by Teddy Roosevelt, which is, I'm guessing, where the, you know, the terminology comes from. And that idea of engaging the field, because it speaks to something else that you've been talking a lot about, especially since Dr. Todd Snyder, you know, gifted us that that definition of intelligence, being able to get what you really want. And so one of the things that I see is the arena is this invitation to guardians and the founders to, you know, you've been learning all this stuff. And so that knowledge gathering and dot collection is, you know, something that we, most people like us, do like to do. But the arena is a place where you can actually turn that into learning, meaning you can take knowledge, apply knowledge to change behavior when you encounter a similar situation. So it's a place where you can practice and can start connecting dots and start to use your terminology, becoming the kind of person that you seek to become, the kind of person that can get what they, that knows what they really want and can get what they really want because they have put in the reps and they're putting forth the effort. And one of the things that you've been encouraging those of us in the success circle to do since the last session is to look in the rearview mirror. And that has been super powerful for me. If you don't mind just providing us with a short riff of like what, if someone is thinking about, if someone's a guardian already or a founding member already, and they're thinking about participating more actively in the arena, or there's people in this Facebook group watching this broadcast that are starting to think about, well, that kind of sounds interesting and compelling. Maybe I want to begin my journey towards guardian. How can looking in the rearview mirror help them get a little closer to the thing that they see themselves heading towards as they're looking out the windshield.
Yeah. So most people are forward looking, and that it works for us and against us. We do need something to aim for. Right. But the issue with being forward looking is you're not here. You're not here now. Same with being, you can't spend too much time looking back either. Like, you got to be here now. So it's just recognizing kind of where you're at. And so there's a lot of, I think depression is being stuck in the past and anxiety is being stuck in the future type thing. So as much as possible, we want to be here and now and make an active choice, whether we're looking forward out the windshield or behind us in the rearview mirror. Now, most entrepreneurs, most people in general that have goals are looking out the windshield. They're going, how am I going to do this? What's the next marketing campaign? Who's my avatar? Like, they're searching for something out there. Same with, like, what's the next diet I'm going to try? You know, they're online. So anytime you're online Googling shit, you're looking at the windshield. You're trying to find something out in front of you. One of the most powerful questions, because I can't tell you the number of business owners that are like, I'm like, what's your revenue? Like, oh, you know, about $1 million a year. I said, okay, that's great. How long you been in business? Oh, 8 years. Okay, that's great. And they go, I got a sales problem though. You don't have a sales problem. If you make $1 million a year and you've been doing it for 8 years, you don't have a sales problem. You probably have a sustainability problem. But if you didn't know how to make sales, you wouldn't be making $1 million and you wouldn't have been alive for 8 years. So this is looking out the windshield where we could say, okay, why don't you list out everything you did in the past that made sales? And they list it all out and say, okay, how many of those things have you tried since then? And usually like, oh, well, I haven't. Because our brain is so oriented towards new and more that we do a thing. We're like, oh, that kind of worked. And then we move on. And we're looking for another thing that works and another thing that works and another thing that works. And we have a trail of things that already work behind us. So it's really useful. It's called the rearview mirror. To look back at the things that were effective before, because there is evidence that they work for you, and try those before anything new. And they may not work anymore. So a lot of times you get like, yeah, well, I did this and it worked really well. It's like, okay, have you done it again? Well, no. Well, you should try it again. Yeah, but I did it in like the early 2000s. Things are different now. Sure, try it anyway. Just check it off the box. You know, it's like that's how science works. You make a hypothesis. You go, this won't work. And then you test it. And you're right or you're wrong. So you adopt a scientific orientation and you look back and just try it. You've already done it. You already know how. There's not going to be a learning curve. It's the lowest effort, most efficient way. And it's the highest probability, because anything new has no data. Anything you've done before has data. So if it worked in the past, it is more likely to work than something new, period. So it's just saying, okay, you know, Jeff Moore has a great story about this. He did a direct mail campaign for his restaurant back when he had a restaurant. He did it one time and they were like 30% oversubscribed. It did so well. It was astonishing. And then eventually he closed the restaurant down and all that. And he tells the story all the time. He's like, I don't know why I didn't just do that again. Because he's looking for new shit to do. But he just done that one thing that works over and over and over again, it would have been a different story. So whatever it is you're trying to accomplish, you could say, yeah, you know, I really would like to get back to the weight I was before. It's like, okay, well, you've been that way before. What were you doing? Start there. Really like to, you know, get on a wait list for my product or service. Like, have you been on a waitlist before? Yes. How'd you get there? And you just look back. And that's where I would start. If you come into the arena, because it is, it is, again, most efficient. The data's there. It should be safe and comfortable because you've done it before. It's a great way to test stuff. And it'll probably, some number of those things will work, which means you'll also make progress while engaging the field. And again, it's the safest way to engage the field because you've done it before. So there's not this huge learning curve. There's not a bunch of unexpected. The first time you did, a whole bunch of unexpected shit happens. I know that because that always happens. But this time around, you'll be a little more prepared. So it's always better to repeat things that have been effective. You might iterate them a little bit. You might say they were like, I did this diet or I did this sales campaign and it worked really well, but the consequences weren't awesome. And we say, okay, well, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. What caused those consequences? Let's apply the same thing minus the things that caused the consequences. So if you have been alive for any amount of time, if you're a full-grown adult, you have a trail of stuff in the rearview mirror, and it is totally worth going through all of that stuff. And you're going to find things that you never, ever want to do again. Cool. Put them on the list. Shit I'll never do again. And you're going to find things that totally worked, and for some reason, you're going to have an aversion to doing them again. It's probably because you're an ADD entrepreneur. And so, but you got to explore that. What's more important, doing new exciting stuff or getting the result that I want? So there's a whole dialogue that has to happen. And if doing new exciting stuff is more important, that's fine. But you forfeit the right to complain about the outcome. And if getting the outcome you want is more important, then you got to go test the stuff. Just if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. That's fine. But you have to go test the things that already have proven they have some level of efficacy. If they work, great. You're getting closer to the outcome. If not, at least you took them through the process, right? So that's the big thing is rearview mirror and a scientific orientation. Science would be totally useless if we were like, yeah, this is my hypothesis, so I'm just going to assume it's true and move on to something else. That would be ridiculous, right? And that's what everybody does in their business and their life. Like, yeah, I would have this conversation with so-and-so, but he'll never listen. It's like hypothesis, no test, assumption as a fact. You know, you're assuming it's a fact, and that is a problem. So all the stuff that you think you know is going to happen, just test it real quick. Say, yeah, I really like to have this conversation with so-and-so, but he's not going to take it well, and he just won't get it, so I'm not going to. Stop yourself and say, all right, hypothesis, he's going to take it this way. Go have the conversation. If he takes it exactly the way that you thought, confirmed. If he takes it different in any other way than exactly what you thought, then you were wrong. And there's assumptions that you're making that you can adjust. And if you adjust that, you get a little bit closer to reality. And you see how that you can kind of just it goes on and on and on. So I think that's the biggest thing about the rearview mirror is seeing the stuff. And then, yeah, I totally get it. Like, yeah, well, that's back when Facebook ads were super affordable. It won't work again. Okay. Try it. As soon as the data comes in, you can see, yep, hypothesis validated. Boom. Now I know. And if you work down that list, you're going to find a whole bunch of shit that still works.
So many questions or little highlights here. So for those, you mentioned, I'll go back to the community building because I'm being selfish. You mentioned before you got into building a community that you weren't monetizing and how to go about that. And you mentioned something, if you're not monetizing it in the short term, like you're not going to, you know, monetize it as soon as you kind of, I guess, get numbers or whatever the metrics are. But how would you go about that if you were trying to build a community to monetize in the short term? Like, what is the difference between the two there?
So it's not really whether you're trying to monetize it or not, because it is, but I'm using words interchangeably, so I make that explicit. If you have to monetize it, right? That's if you have to, because the only way I can justify community right now is if it pays my bills, and if it doesn't, I can't justify it. That's a different thing, because that's out of necessity. In that case, you do whatever the hell you need to do to pay your bills. It's just not going to be the community that you want long term. This is, if anybody watches this replay or watches it live, we do this at some events where you go, you know, raise your hand if you've ever hated your clients, and everybody raises their hands. That's what you get. And that's okay. It's okay to hate your job, because the alternative is you're homeless and don't eat. You know, so just to make that clear, the whole do what you love, yada, 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 is great if your basic needs are met. If you need to meet your basic needs, whatever those are, it's not really about making a community that you love and will do forever. That's not a luxury that you have right now. So just make that, that's a different thing. Survival is a different thing than thriving. So if you're talking about, I got to figure out how to survive and I'm going to do it through a community, that's a different thing. And you might hate it, and that's okay because it's better than starving. Now on the flip side, if you may want to monetize it and your basic needs are met through other means, it's the same strategy actually. Because here's, if I got 100 people coming to meet me every Sunday at Einstein's Bagels in person, what I have is I have influence. I have a platform. There's a million ways I can monetize that. Einstein's offered to give us equity. And they're like, so the owner of Einstein's came and he was like, I was told he's the one person in that city, Vero Beach, Florida, that I would never get in touch with. He's just too busy. He's like, no, you know, like he's a big, big, big time guy and he's not going to come hang out, you know? So we sat at that fucking Einstein's, lines out the door until finally he showed up. And he's like, I had to see what was going on because it was going to take me 5 years to break even on Einstein's investment. And like, it got collapsed down to like a year at this rate. And I want to know who's doing this. So we had conversations about equity and Einstein's and all that stuff. Monetize the community. I did not take the equity and we didn't go that route. However, that connection led to the work that we did for the Florida Department of Health. And that was a big paycheck. So the point is, you saw Forrest Gump, you know, where he's like, oh, you got shit on your shoe. He's like, it happens. What, shit? Yeah, sometimes shit happens, right? It's like when you have, so that became a whole brand. I know it's a fictional story, but if you have a group of, if you have a community, you are valuable to anybody that wants to sell stuff to that community. You're valuable to that community, will want to buy probably anything else that you're doing. So if you're all, you know, you all go hiking and you wear yoga pants or whatever, and everybody else is going to start wearing yoga pants. And then you have a brand of yoga pants that you come out with, and boom, you're monetizing the community. So indirectly monetizing the community is always better because there's less friction to growing the community. If the community's $10 a month, there's a friction there. If the community's free, just come hang out. The other thing is when you have a transaction, generally the way to get to push a transaction through is to make a promise, right? So they're buying for the promise. They're not buying because they're just like you. If it's a free community, a free group, they join because you're their kind of people and they're more likely to want to do whatever you do. So you can monetize what you do through affiliate relationships or your own company. We probably made $1 million off of people coming to Einstein's, hanging out, realizing, because I own a gym and a nutrition company. So a few things happen. They're like, all these people that are like super jacked and all these women that look really good are eating bagels. So naturally people are like, what the hell, you eat bagels? They're like, yeah, Nick and Trevor, they taught me how to eat bagels and still look good. Best sales pitch ever. right. So the point, like if you get your kind of people around doing the kind of things you do, it's the unique things that you do that people go, huh. So the other thing was people started bringing their family because we had gym members that were always like women in particular. They'd be like, well, Nick said this and Trevor said this and Nick said this. And at some point their husbands would be like, all right, you're talking about these dudes a lot, you know, like, should I be concerned? And they could say, no, come to Einstein's and meet them. And so it eliminated a lot of that intimidation factor. You know, maybe they had a sister that's afraid of going to the gym and they're trying to get her involved. She could say, hey, why don't you come to Einstein's and just meet them? And they meet us and they're like, wow, these guys are not like total dickheads. So they join. So all of that is building different companies through a community that is not built directly to feed those companies. So again, if you're Forrest Gump and you're running, you got a big line of people behind you, you are very, very valuable to the people that want access to that line of people behind you. So that's the, I would really just build an amazing free community. It will grow way faster if it's free. There will be no expectation other than hanging out with people like myself if I join the community. Those two things combined create way more concentric growth than having that friction that is a transaction, and then having an expectation. And when people have an expectation, it screws up. Like they miss all the ways that they love your community because they're sitting with this expectation of some deliverable. So if we can remove that, that's the best way, in my opinion, to grow community. Now, there's bigger strategies that you know, there's reasons to create paid communities and there's reasons to do all that stuff. But here's the big question. When somebody pays for something, and I'm over-explaining because, again, I think the people that watch this replay, and maybe we'll pull this out for a podcast or something. There are certain things that drop precipitously in value to the consumer after they're consumed. I'll explain what I mean, because it's really important for communities, especially when you talk about free versus paid. If I drink this LaCroix for the first time, I buy it, it's like $2, right? And I drink it and I fucking love it. I say, I would pay $2 or more again for this exact same thing. It is a consumable. That's a good thing to sell because they consume it. And what are they going to do? They're going to consume it again and again and again and again. Now, if I say, hey, will you teach me? I really want to learn, I don't know, some skill. I really want to learn this skill. And I might pay $10,000 to learn that skill. And then you teach it to me. It's totally worth it. But I will never pay $10,000 or more to learn that same skill again. Right? So after I consume it, it drops in value to, it's still valuable to me to have that skill, but I'm not going to pay for the same skill again. That's why I don't like courses. Nobody's going to buy the same course two times in a row. So if you're thinking about community, you think about like recurring subscription membership and stuff. The question you have to ask is, in my opinion, after they come in and experience it, would they, so let's say they pay $20 a month to come in and experience it. Would they pay $20 a month for the same exact thing? That's the big question. If not, it is not a good thing to sell. Better do it for free because it's all goodwill. It's all goodwill. So there's ways to turn it into consumables, you know, live calls, Q&A, all that stuff. But that's the big question is, does this maintain its value or become more valuable as it gets consumed? Education gets less valuable as it gets consumed on the market. I'm not saying it doesn't have value, but I'm saying, again, if you could buy a power up, you know, you buy a pill and then like you learn Kung Fu, like the Matrix, you pay whatever you pay for that pill, $10,000 for that pill. And then you know Kung Fu for the rest of your life. You're not going to pay $10,000 for the same pill again. So that falls into that's a thing that you either charge for one time, because it's totally worth the $10,000. But I would not sell that as a $200 a month membership, because it has no value after the first month. As soon as the thing's consumed, the value disappears to that consumer, not to everybody else, but just that one consumer. So that's kind of the, you know, thing to think about community. And community can be a great, I think a free community with generally the Holy Grail is like a free community with some higher level of structure that is paid. That's really the, because within a community, Guardian as an example, but within a community, people do value identity. So pay, you know, you get, it's all free, but you pay $20 a month. You're a VIP. What do you get? You get a, to say you're a VIP, and that is valuable to people. People absolutely value a label that says, you know, people fucking spend $150 to have Harley Davidson tattooed on them. Right. Just to say, I am a Harley fan. So there's value to people, but you can't have status within a community unless you have a community. So free community, then status and badges is probably the easiest way to monetize, just a, in my opinion, just a pure community. Just status and badges. People pay for status. And they're happy to pay for it. And they're the only deliverable is status. So it's not like a huge obligation to fulfill on stuff.
Really appreciate all that, Nick, and appreciate you've been really super generous with your time with us here today. As we're wrapping up, I just want to share one quote from a book that you actually introduced me to that actually speaks to some of the things that you've said about the rear view mirror and this idea of testing what has worked in the past. Kevin Ashton in How to Fly a Horse, my favorite quote from that book is, where he's distinguishing between confidence and certainty. Confidence is belief in yourself. Certainty is belief in your beliefs. Certainty is a barrier and confidence is a bridge. And I see the arena and some of the things that are going on in the success circle and elsewhere as this opportunity to earn to practice the earned path, to earn confidence by doing the thing out loud and in public in a safe, place where you can get that tight feedback loop that allows you to iterate and improve. So just want to encourage anyone that's thinking about the arena, the success circle, all these, this whole idea of engaging the field. Inside this Facebook group, there are lots of folks that are guardians or that are participating in these things. You can ask us questions and we're happy to answer. And before we wrap up, I just want to shout out to a couple folks that have been watching. Yusuf has been super active in the Facebook group. He's also happens to be a member of my community, and he has put a great comment in there. Our good friend Michael Foreman has dropped a couple comments in there. It's always great to hear from those of you that are tuning in, whether it's in replay or live. And with that, Vivica, I'm going to let you wrap us up and take us home.
Yeah, let me give you one thing real quick.
Sure. Yeah, I was going to ask you if you had any last thoughts, Nick. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll give you two things really quick. Part of it, some of it's for Vivica, some of it's for everybody else. Here's the power of the arena, and this is why you should step into it. It's a very important structure. So first, I'll give you a recommendation. If you want to build a community, before you do anything else, do a two-step and just do the first step. Hey, if I built a community about this, would you be interested? The end. Just put it out. Put it on Twitter. Put it on Facebook. Put it on LinkedIn. If you get crickets, nobody fucking cares. Delete the post. but there will be data there. So you don't have to worry about how do I do it? Where do I do it? What do I charge for it? First, you just say, hey, if I did this, would you be interested? Because there's some possibility that 20 people go, yes, I'm totally in. What are the details? And now that's a micro step. Now you can justify the extra bandwidth to figure out the details. I would not even try to figure out the details until you either decide what you're going to do anyway or if people are interested. So step one. So if you did that and you're like, okay, I did that. Now what? You come to the arena and you can say, I did this and here's what happened. Now the power in I did this and here's what happened is you are never wrong. Ever. Right? All you're doing is you're saying, I did this and this happened. You're not sitting on a soapbox. You're not talking down to people. You're not being preachy. Right? You're not trying to sound smart. Or you're just saying, I posted this and six people commented. So you can stay in a position like engaging the field where all you are doing is do something and then tell people what happened. And nobody can challenge you on that. There's no reason to feel insecure about it. There's nothing. It's just you know, like I did this and this is what happened. You don't have to know why. You don't have to justify it. You're just sharing the data. And so you are never in a place where you have to feel any other way, or you have to feel any way. And there's nobody can prove you wrong. Nobody can challenge you because it's your data. So for everybody listening, and for Vivica and Scott, it's like, just take the smallest step and you come back and say, I did this and this is what happened. Okay. Just data. But given that data, I would try this next. Okay. Well, I did this and this is what happened. So you're just self-reporting the whole time. And there's just no judgment. There's no positionality. There's nothing other than here's the data. It's scientific orientation. Here's the data. Okay, try this. Here's the data. Okay, try this. Here's the data. And you can walk through pretty much anything that way. But it prevents you from, you know, sounding any way other than I'm just reporting my own data. And nobody can refute that or disagree with it. So it creates even a safer place on the internet where everybody wants to argue all the time. You can't argue with my data. You could try, but I posted this. This is what I posted. I got 6 comments. That's a fact. There's no argument that you could make that I can even justify paying attention to. So it creates, you know, it's really about creating a safe space where you can iterate and not get spun out by the internet.
I appreciate you, Nick, because obviously some of those questions were for me. So hey, man, look, we asked nobody, you know, I'm just taking advantage of Nick's time. I'm sorry. I'm being a little selfish. But I appreciate you. And I'm sure that brought a lot of clarity to others as well, especially with the arena, you know, just being new. But, you know, thank you for all your insights. Super helpful, as always. Super useful. And looking forward to stepping into the arena. I will obviously have to do some steps here, but we'll be happy to report the data, because you know how much I love data. But for those that don't have data, guys, or who don't track their data, just start taking kind of, you know, some initial kind of steps to collect the data, or see if you can find the data. Go through your old stuff and see if you can find some old things that might help you make your case or give you some insight, so that when you're stepping into the arena, or you're not putting it off, right? Like if you've been in business a couple of years, you hopefully can wrangle some data. So just look at what you have. This way you can, you know, go back and kind of do the rear view mirror and stuff like that. But Nick, thank you so much for your time. Awesome as always. Looking forward to the next jam session that we got going on.
All right. And I'll let you guys know we'll probably do some arena stuff next week. So
awesome.
All right. Appreciate you.
All right.
See you all next week.
Thanks, guys.